Mormon Stories Podcast takes a ton of work and depends solely upon listener support. To keep this program alive, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org.
Lori, as I was listening to you talk about some of the fun little comments you'd make to your children, I had my believer hat on and was thinking about, as a believer, how disruptive and unsettling that might be to have even a comment made like, he had a lot of wives, or, you know, the prophet makes a lot of mistakes, or whatever the comment might be. I'm even a little bit uber sensitive about the fact that a lot of this conversation, especially what I've said and maybe what some of the others have said, have been from sort of the disbelieving perspective. And so I'm interested if there's anyone who sort of puts themselves in the believer camp who's willing to maybe share a feeling or ask a question or provide some commentary on to what extent we're being balanced in this discussion, and whether there are topics that maybe hopefully will be addressed or perspectives that so far haven't been really outlined. I know it's a really hard thing, it's putting people on the spot, but is there anyone who wants to sort of jump in and say where we either have it right or wrong, or where we're missing the boat in reflecting the perspective of the believer?
You know, John, as I listened to you talk about your stepfather and his attitude toward the military and so forth, I was thinking of the fact that a lot of the way we see the military depends on the conflict they're engaged in. The World War II GI is an incredibly noble person. Vietnam War, you fight an immoral war, it's going to rub off on you. When you were talking about the fact that believers are terrified of change, and then the term inoculation came up, I was recently thinking about the fact that people who are really devout believers of anything actually have shitty spiritual immune systems. And what has to happen? This can't be balanced. It cannot be balanced because, like you said, it's already been changed. And so what has to happen is people who are terrified of hearing a phrase like, well, actually, you know, Joseph Smith had a lot of wives being said in front of their children, they need stronger spiritual immune systems. That it has to be about the extent to which your faith can withstand challenges from other perspectives. Because if you are that terrified of change, then you know something's wrong with your basic approach. Change should not be that threatening. It shouldn't. It's the fundamental process of life. So in order to get to a place where balance can happen, there has to be more room for change.
Since my husband as a believer isn't going to speak up for himself, I'm going to speak up for him. Sorry. I've been doing that for 20 years, 21 years. He is not terrified of change. He is not terrified of me. He has a very strong spirit and a very strong testimony. And I'm very glad that he does. And it's not about fear that I don't think he fears me, and I don't think he fears what I'm going to teach the children, that I'm going to go off and get tattooed and start drinking and start to, you know, lead my family astray. I think, and you can step in here at any time that you would like to. I think I will turn over the microphone. As he has expressed to me, his fear is that if my mind or my feelings or my belief could change about the church, it could change about him. And I think his fears have a lot more to do with the basic relationship that we have than I think in our conversations, I think he's really okay with me questioning and wondering and looking and searching. He's never, ever told me that I can't do that. And he's never said that that was a condition upon which we married, that I don't ever ask any hard questions. I think he just wants to be assured that our values are going to stay aligned. And I'm sorry, I know I'm probably talking too much, but I'm kind of hoping he'll take the microphone, but he's not. I do not think he's afraid. I don't think he's afraid of change. I think he's a very strong person. And the fact that he is here with me speaks volumes about him and his character and what he thinks of me and our relationship. And I'm profoundly grateful that he would show up here to support me. Thanks.
All right, well, I have a little bit of a dilemma because I'm on the opposite side of your situation. I'm the disbeliever in my relationship, and my wife is afraid that I'm going to teach the kids bad things, and she is afraid that I'm going to become a drunk and do all the things that Mormons don't like. And the reason I'm here is to find out how can I convince her otherwise. She is admittedly content in living in her bliss as a believer, while I am not. And right now, I'm just wondering what I can say, because I can't teach. I can't just pull out all the issues and say, hey, look, Book of Abraham. Hey, look, DNA evidence. Because that just doesn't work. I learned that out the hard way. And I'm wondering what I can do to ease her into improving our relationship to where I can believe what I believe and she can believe what she believes.
Okay. We'll try and address some of that and see if we can get some wisdom from the crowd. Yeah. Before we do that, John, did you have a quick comment?
Yeah.
Okay.
In our marriage, I am the believer. Well, let me rephrase that. We are both believers. She believes somewhat differently than I do, okay? But this is what I've tried to, you know, in my talking with her, I want her to express her beliefs to our children. And again, I have to stress that our children are a lot brighter and smarter and more fair, even the black and white ones, than what we give them credit for. And I grew up in Provo, Utah. I knew Joseph had lots of wives. It wasn't ever a problem for me. I think that if your children are exposed in a natural setting to all the stuff. My kids come home and said, you ruined seminary for me because we learned all the stories at home before, you know. The way that it becomes not so much an issue is to be open and honest and, you know, not like you're trying to propagandize the other way, but just not keep it a secret. And the same can be true for the spouse as well. It's when you're, you know, like you said, with your own experience, it's when you're struggling on your own that it's the hardest, because that's when the other person imagines the worst. So just be open about it.
Okay. Yes, Don.
I have a question for the panelists. What do you say to the argument that not being on the same page as parents confuses kids and is not really a healthy way for them to grow up, to have two parents presenting contradictory accounts of their spirituality?
Let's start, Dan.
I think what happens is that we live in a sort of bubble in the Mormon world a little bit, because when I think of a lot of the marriages and families I've known that are not LDS, people navigate this all the time. mixed faith marriages. I know people who are Jewish who have married Catholics or Protestants, or you see a lot of different faiths come together so often, and they just kind of figure out a way. And you know, we have a kind of a model in Mormonism that's so strong that it's hard to think outside of that. So that's a long way of saying that I'm not sure I buy the argument that both parents have to have a same belief and same story, otherwise the kids get to be a mess and confused, because I think kids have been growing up with parents who think different things for a very long time. And I think the way you remedy it is that you decide what you do agree upon. And like I said, I think most people agree strongly on values, those sorts of things. So you focus on those, while at the same time teaching that, yeah, mom and dad believed some different things. I mean, that's how we approach it too. I mean, just a few weeks ago, my 10-year-old, Laurie attends. I take my kids most of the time by myself when I attend. Laurie probably comes once a month or so, give or take. And like I said, we've talked at different levels to each of our kids. My 10-year-old, as we were pulling out, just out of the blue said, how come mom doesn't come to church with us much? And he caught me. I was kind of late doing like a couple things. And so I kind of just gave a very short, brief answer. I said, mom and dad think different things about the church. And so mom chooses not to go as much. And it was kind of just a short, quick thing. And it was something I had meant to come back to a little later, maybe that night, talk to him more quietly, see if he had more questions. I never had a chance to, but he just kind of went, oh, okay. And then went back to fighting with his sister and, all the other stuff they do. We don't present to them that they have to, and I don't present, even as the one that stays active, that everything they believe in, everything they hear in church, they have to believe. That's not the way I was brought up in it. So, I think both sides in this kind of question have to let go of some of the exact expectations they have as far as an outcome. Set those expectations at a more, Laura and I both agree we want our kids to grow up with strong moral beliefs, about honor and honesty and these things that we agree on. And they may grow up to be active Mormons, different from their mom. They may grow up to be non-active or whatever, different from me. And we both have to kind of let their paths go the direction they're going to go, because we really can't control it. And our three kids are very different from each other anyway, so I fully expect they're going to end up in some different places somehow. And I just don't know how that's going to come.
Lori, I'm just wondering, your 10-year-old turned 8 after your crisis of faith, so was he, or was she, he?
He.
Was he baptized, and are your 5-year-old, are you going to have them baptized at 8, or how do you feel about that?
Well, I think it's important because it's his faith tradition. And I've raised him to the 4 and 5 was when I started to question. And I was really nervous because I thought, what's going to happen? And is it going to be dogmatic? My oldest baptism wasn't that great of an experience. But we both gave him the option, do you want to? And I termed it in terms of, this is what Jesus did. He's 8. This is what Jesus did. Do you want to be like, do you want to be like Jesus? Or are you not ready? Do you want to wait to do it? And just right off the bat, I really want to. And whether it's all because his friends were, but I saw that, I interpreted that as being, here's my little 8-year-old, and all he wants to do is make good decisions. And this is a good decision in his mind. And it was a wonderful experience because all of our extended family came and supported this one little 8-year-old boy. And there were wonderful little songs about Christ. We got to pick the songs, and the primary presence, he was there. And he was, I was really glad that I did it. I was steeled up to kind of have some negative moments, but I didn't. It was a really good one. But I think that when you're doing this thing where you're teaching both belief systems, it's going to confuse the kids. And I don't think that we should say it's not going to confuse them. It's like you have this change put in front of you. I didn't ask for the change. I thought I'd be holding to that iron rod, making it to celestial kingdom. I didn't foresee this. And then I'm thrusting it on Dan, whether he chooses it or not. And we both have to adapt to that change. I like the Darwin quote where it says it's not the strongest or the fastest of the species that survive, but those who are most adaptable to change. And I think about that in marriage. Like, can we adapt to not just this change, but all the changes that we get? And so when I look at that, like, will the children be confused? Probably from time to time they will. I've been confused, even being raised Mormon. But the other option to them being confused or wondering is that, number one, if you only give them one way, and I eat my belief system and give them Dan's or vice versa, is saying, number one, I don't trust you, my child, to make your own decisions, to listen to your own heart, to pray, to get your own answers. And number two, if I'm doing that and hiding my belief system where he is, I think that's way more damaging than them being confused and figuring it out for themselves. They're seeing that Dad doesn't have a voice in this family, or Mom doesn't have a voice in this family. Dad and Mom don't respect each other. And so I'm really adamant that not just me, that I should be able to teach my children and speak to them, but that they listen to Dan as well. And it took me a lot of peace to come to the fact that they can go to church and not become damaged by the things I feel damaged by. But because he's open to me, to giving a balanced perspective, it's helpful. Yeah. I think I get away with it too, all these crazy comments of, you know, of my alternative views, because I'm so accommodating and kind about the Mormon viewpoint. In fact, our kitty died, our 12-year-old cat died last week. And it was just, I told my 5-year-old, and it was just like she was sobbing in my arms. And I so badly just wanted to say what my mom told me when my cat died when I was her age, which was, oh, he's waiting in the celestial kingdom for you to come. And I just sat there like hurting, you know. And I was able to offer, you know, Dad believes that there's, you know, and I don't know, maybe his body's just going to go back into the earth and grow into a tree, and that's beautiful too. So I can offer both perspectives. For a 5-year-old, she probably just wants to believe that she's going to see her kitty again. You know, the 10-year-old, 15-year-old, different. Yeah.
When, the question on the mixed faith thing, too. I grew up in a part member family, and my dad didn't join until I was about 15 years old. So I'm kind of, it's maybe a little easier for me because I'm just accustomed to it. Growing up with parents that had different beliefs, and I don't feel, or maybe I am screwed up because of that. I don't know, but it can be done. It doesn't have to be as hard as it seems like it might be.
Yeah, I don't think there's any research to support that kids who are given different perspectives are going to grow up confused and meandering the world. And in fact, I think that we're actually giving them a jump start on real life. Because guess what? The Mormon bubble, you know, however protective you want to be, is a false sense of security. They're already listening to different perspectives every day at school or with your extended family, or, you know, and as they grow older, that will grow more and more. And so, again, not that kids who grow up in a faith, you know, where both parents are the same, not that that's bad either, but I'm just saying this doesn't have to be bad either. This can be an opportunity to raise children in a different way, but in a way that still elicits respect and trust and all these kind of common values that we have. One other comment I wanted to make, because there were some issues about change and fear and these kind of words that sometimes can feel provocative, came up, and change is fearful. There's no way around that. And as long as you are all a human being, which I think we all are in this room, that's just part of our makeup. Change brings about fear. It also brings about great opportunity and great growth and great, you know, just different ways to be able to look at things. So there's pros and cons to everything, And so to say that we're fearful, yeah, absolutely we're fearful. And we don't have to be ashamed of that. We don't have to be ashamed of our fear. But we need to recognize it and not get stuck in fear. Because that's when we're fear-based, when we're raising our children, or we're staying in a marriage for fear-based reasons, then everybody, that is when we have damage, long-term damage.
So kind of going along the last question about the practices like the baptism that you had, Lori, what do you do or how do you react when Dan busts out the scriptures at 5 a.m. for 2 hours of scripture reading with your kids? I mean, that kind of stuff. Or you know, the time's going to come when your boys may not want to go to young men's because there's some dynamics there that just aren't right. And he wants them to go and you're saying, wait a minute. I don't think that that's the right thing. How do you navigate through that specific?
Well, first off, we laugh because I was the one pulling kids out of bed at 5 a.m. and Dan was still in bed, you know.
There's nothing wrong with that.
He was never that type of Mormon, so.
I'm awful, I'm sorry.
He always says I was the good Mormon and he, you know. But, yeah. So it does get tricky because at some point I have to be okay with the fact that I may be outside my children's temple wedding like a kid waiting outside the front door. But at some point, I have to give them that. That is their choice. That is their path. And only they can choose it. And I've done it. It hasn't brought me misery. I might have done it differently and made different choices, but hopefully I can be happy for them and support them in whatever they choose. He's had to make the same. We both had to come to that same realization that his boys may not go on missions, and his parents may be really disappointed by that. But we've decided to teach the kids the very best we can with what we're given and stand by their decisions that they make as adults. I struggle with the young women's program a lot, the sexism within the church. Those are really hot buttons for me. I saw so much of my shaping as an adolescent teenage girl in the church from that program, not from my parents. These really cool young women who were in the program teaching me all this stuff, I started to listen to them more than my mom in many ways. And it just affects you. And Dan and I have talked about that a lot as far as we're going to have to wait until our daughter, you know, she's 5 now, we'll wait until she's 14, 12 and gets in the program and how it's affecting her. And I'm hoping that by the time she's 12, she's able to grasp enough nuance that she knows. I think it would be pretty foreign to her to experience the sexism and not think it's weird. So I'm hoping by that point she'll be ready. We've agreed that if I think it's damaging, we'll rediscuss it. If she really wants to be in the program, I'm not going to stop her from doing something she really wants to do, but can I temper it? And it's something really you have to navigate gently as you go along. The scouting program I'm not a big fan of either. And our 8-year-old, like, we didn't send him to scout camp this summer. But he goes when he wants to be with his friends. Same with our 15-year-old, yeah. We just...
So do they pit you against each other? So do you ever get, well, dad or mom doesn't go to church, and so, or mom doesn't read scriptures with us, so why should I have to? I mean, does that ever happen?
Not yet.
Okay.
My oldest, about 2 years ago, started expressing to us, you know, some doubts. He doesn't even know if he believes in God. And one day he was like, he brought up, you know, do I have to go to church if I'm not sure if I believe in God? And my instinct was first, oh no, what's going on here? And then I thought for a second, I'm like, well, if I were to leave you home, I wouldn't be letting you play your Nintendo the whole 3 hours. And he went, oh. And then he got on his tie and went to church. you know, so there's sometimes you have to see what the real, you know, in the mission field they say to resolve concerns, get to the point. But to the heart of your question, from my standpoint, I would like my kids to experience enough of the church to see if they can take the good from it, and then make their own decisions about, you know, are they going to believe and. Things like mission and temple marriage, that's really up to them. And I'm not going to create a thing that I'm going to be, you know, you're going to be a disappointment to me if you choose one way or another. As far as the stuff when they're kids, like seminary, youth programs and that, you know, we really take a flexible approach. I'm not going to push something if it's causing pain for them. If they're scout troop, if they don't enjoy the activities and they don't care about going through the ranks and they don't get along with the other scouts there, I'm not going to push that. I do bring them Sundays with me. I think it's important to kind of, you know, have that experience as LDS. My oldest attends seminary, and he actually seems to like it, even though he gets up really early. So, you know, it's kind of a customized approach. And you have to, and what I had to let go of when we had our conversation with our daughter is that we may have to tailor it a little bit for each kid. Because our oldest is a really laid-back kind of kid and isn't really the type, I think, that's taking everything literally and having it cause pain. Our others might. And we might have to change our approach a little bit depending on what we perceive their needs are. So I think both parents have to be open to some degree that, you know, there's not a universal approach that works. But you have to also kind of let where the kids want to go, you know. So if your kids want to be there and you're not sure it's a great thing, I'd kind of default to that. Yeah.
It was interesting because the fear plays in on both sides. We can say it happens to the believers, but it happens to us too. So it's, you know, you get fearful of what are they going to turn into. And so, for example, my son went last fall to a fireside. And when he came home, find out it was a fireside on Prop 8. We live in California. And I said, well, what did you think? So what I've learned to do is ask a lot of questions. What do you think God looks like? What do you feel like when you pray? So when he came home, I said, what did you think? I didn't want to make assumptions about what they said. He said, they want us to vote yes on 8, and this is why. And I said, well, what did you think? And he said, I don't understand why gay people want to get married anyway. And that killed me. I was like, they've done it. You know, they're turning my son. And I said, okay, chill out. And I sat him down, and I said, you know, this is what I think. And this is what my gay friends think. And I have, you know, good yoga students who are a couple who've been together for 15 years. And I told him about my friends. And his head cocked. And I reminded myself, I can't choose what he believes. I can only offer him. Can I not be afraid of him seeing a perspective other than mine? You know, can I teach him to just sit and that I'm going to be okay with whatever he chooses? Well, two and a half weeks later, I noticed every time Dan and I would talk about Prop 8, his ears would perk up and his eyes would go like that. And sure enough, you know, after he'd processed it, I think after the election, after it all settled down, he's really come to a mature understanding of the deep issues of that. You know, he's 15, that's age appropriate, but we have to watch the fear that the church is going to ruin our children. And I'm not afraid of them learning other perspectives other than my own now.
I think the focus on flexibility there is really great. And I think, again, fear on both sides. You're afraid if they don't believe in the church. You're afraid if they do believe in the church. So, I mean, there's, you know, and there's good things on both and there's bad things on both. And so just kind of, and the sooner your children learn that, and most of them know that already intrinsically, and the more we can be an asset to them. I mean, they're kind of like the poster children for this whole issue. So I think that's great. Oh, and my one comment is we, I think, sometimes are under this idea that we have so much control when we don't. And the number one thing I hope you can visualize is the moment that you choose to have a child with another person is the moment you give up half your say. I mean, there's a sperm and there's an egg, and they both have genetic makeup and personality traits you have no control over. So this idea that we are going to stop our other spouse from influencing our child, or that we're going to be the main influencer in that child's life, is false to begin with. They're already half not your DNA. So, you know, you just have to kind of, again, be open to that tolerance of difference and what kind of rich conversations can come from that. And I think you'll be surprised how amazing it can be, you know, to think outside the box.
And I'll just add, because it's following on, I have seen many couples where the children become full balls in this battle between belief and disbelief, where I hope you understand that when I say believer and disbeliever, it's within the context of this dilemma we're talking about. You know, non-Mormons have lots of beliefs, and and active Mormons don't believe things. So please understand when I use the term believer and disbeliever that it's in that context. But I've seen disastrous consequences when, let's just say, the believing spouse is excited to have her kids go to church, and the disbelieving spouse really doesn't want his kids going to church. And so he does everything he can to allure the kids, to keep them from going to church by saying, hey, if you don't go to church, we'll go to the park, we'll go skiing, we'll go have a picnic, it'll be awesome, but it's your choice, you know. And the mom is like, you're doing everything you can to make him or her not want to go. You're totally spoiling this. Or even with baptism, the same type of thing, where the kids become footballs in a bigger contact sport between the parents. And I could just say that I think that putting kids in that situation, let's say that you're the believer for a second, putting your kids in that situation is going to be far more damaging than even you and your spouse deciding to leave the church and having the church never be a part of their lives again. Making them the object of a battle between you two, I think, is one of the biggest disservices you could ever give to your kids.
It really goes back to the core values, that when you do that, you're doing it in the name of your values, but you're espousing everything that doesn't match with your values. An example is more than what, you know, I mean, the example is what you're teaching your kids. So that's the catch-22 all of you are in. You're in a huge catch-22. And it's interesting because I see it as a great avenue for your own personal progression. And I hope you take on that challenge, that it can be something that will challenge you in ways that you never thought possible, and you might be really surprised at what you're capable of.
And so something I'd love to explore today for those who are willing to share or who are interested is how, if any of you are struggling getting on the same page, where, like Natasha said, are any of you struggling getting on a united front like Dan and Lori seem to be, clearly are? Are any of you struggling with that so that the kids don't end up being footballs? Or maybe you guys have all had that figured out. But I'm going to let you guys ask those questions or raise those issues. But I just want to strongly caution you against that. If you're a believer and you love the Lord and you believe in family values, don't do that to your kids. And if you're a disbeliever and you want your kids out, try and temper that, knowing that you want your kids best interest at heart. Now, we had a comment here, but Paul, you raised your hand. Is this comment, who has the mic? Is this part of this conversation, or is it a new topic?
I wanted to ask a new
comment. New question. Paul, was your comment following on?
New topic.
Okay, let's go here and then over to Paul.
Is it Lori or Lari?
Lari.
We listened to the podcast involving you two, which was wonderful. And to use a Mormon cliche, you seem to have a really sweet spirit about you that I've been accused of lacking, and I've been accused of kind of being hardened of heart or harsh. But one of my dilemmas is that inherent within the culture is a... the word marginalization's come up several times today, and within that marginalization is condescension. I've had a bishop meaning well. I've had a bishop tell my daughter to stay close to my wife; she's the strong one. I've had a neighbor tell my daughter to quit going to mountain bike races with me on Sunday and get to church where she belongs. And that really triggers the fight aspect of my fight or flight mechanism, so to speak. And you seem to be dealing well with that, much better than me. And so I'm kind of curious as to how you deal with the cultural portrayal of you as the weaker one, so to speak.
I think it's almost not fair in the sense that we haven't had that. So for you to say those things have been said to your kids, I do just really feel for that, because those things haven't been said to my kids. Yeah, it is huge, and it's really hard to navigate that gracefully. We went in when we started to get a handle on being on the same page. We went into the bishop and sat down with him, and I met with him, and I spilled it. I can't have a calling. I was a Sunbeam teacher, and they asked me, you know, they gave me the new manual, and the first lesson was, I have a Heavenly Father in heaven who loves me. And I realized, I can't teach that. I don't believe that anymore. I had shifted so far, and it was sucking me dry just being there, and I really was ready to go off and explore my new teaching. So I sat down with him, and I laid out with the bishop, I'm not here to be a project, and I don't want people coming by. I don't want people trying to reconvert me. I've gone through this on my own. This is where I am. And he asked me a lot of hard questions. It wasn't pleasant. But following that conversation, I still made it really clear. I kept my cool. I told him what I expected, where my lines were, and what I wanted. But following that, the following week, Dan went in to talk to him. And what I had said in there in the meeting was, what I want from you as a ward and as a bishop is to support my husband, who's going to be coming alone with children a lot more. You know, and I want you to know where we are and not try and think I'm wavering. This is where I am. Dan went in a week later and talked to the bishop and said, explained the situation. They had a good talk. But part of the talk, he said, if I have to choose between the church and my wife, I will choose my wife. And that really laid a groundwork for them as far as us and our relationship, where he supported me and where I was at, and made it clear to the bishop and the ward. They've been really sensitive, I think, probably because of that. Really sensitive. And I think a lot of it is how Dan handles it at church. Our son has hair almost as long as mine. He wears his white shirt and passes the sacrament tray.
It's longer.
Longer now. And so people make comments, kind of half-joking, but I think they really want to push us to more orthodoxy. And Dan goes, yeah, he just jokes it off. He's got to wear the long hair where he can, and he points to his balding spot, you know. And
actually, I point to the painting of Jesus.
So we try to present this unified front with each other, but it's a fine line. It's working kindness with honesty, defining that line so that people don't walk over it, with still allowing them to move back and forth through the line. You know, it's tricky. I think, and you'd asked this tricky question about how do you not become viewed as being angry and bitter and the atheist and I think the trick is to not become the bitter. You can only not get that viewpoint by not being the bitter, angry, drunk apostate. You know, that's the way to combat it. So when I go to church, if it bothers me, if I'm in a lesson that bothers me, I just leave. I unplug it and I leave. It's not for me today. If I'm in church, but when I walk in, I smile, I hug my friends, I don't put my issues onto them. So I think that I'm seen as being, I think I confuse people a lot, because they're like, why is this happy woman coming in? The only way to prove that it's working for me and that I'm happy is to actually be happy. And I'm sorry, I'm going on and on. When you're going through faith crisis, you're not happy. So that's the hard part. You're angry, you're frustrated. And I come back to over and over, we can project out on other people. You know, the church does this, and they're teaching that, and this person did this to my children, and I don't like this. But it comes back to, all that stuff comes back to us. And what I've learned for myself to not feel bitterness and anger and frustration is to take really hard looks at myself and to start settling in my own beliefs and trying to make peace within myself. But I feel for your...
Only, I think, I don't know where you and your wife are at as far as your own marital relationship, but I do think that presenting a united front, like she's talking about, as a spousal unit can be a huge part of this. that this is not, you know, where the believer spouse gets to go to church and everybody boo-hoos and, you know, it's a big cry fest for that person. And then it is kind of like the one person is villainized and seen as the bad person. So that's more of a marital issue. Now, with your children and when your children are involved, those are really crappy situations. And my fight comes out, too, when my children are it's the mama bear, you know. And but if we can reframe that as a learning opportunity, and it is a chance where we can say, well, you know, yeah, there are going to be times when people think low of us or when we're put up against unfair criticism. That happens to all of us. It's an opportunity to talk about that with your kids and how are we going to deal with this and how are we going to handle that and do we believe what they say about us? And, you know, but those are all conversations that are much easier and much more effective if you and your wife are on the same page. Now, if you and your wife are not, then there's probably needs to be some marital work to be done first.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to provide feedback, please check us out at mormonstories.org. If you want to help keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider either making a financial contribution or spreading the word about this episode through your blog, Twitter account, Facebook page, family newsletter, or through your ward bulletin and ward newsletter. Just kidding about those last two. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. Check them out at claytonpixton.com or skypixton.com. That's Sky with an E, S-K-Y-E, pixton.com. Thank you.